getting paid.
Patrick Mahomes, boy.
You should have had that.
What song?
Money.
Oh yeah, facts. Facts.
You are now listening to the Duo Sports and Stuff podcast. Here are your hosts, Deontay Epps and Dane Beasley.
Hello and welcome to the 20th. 2-0. We made it into the 20s, Dane. Episode 20 of the Duo Sports and Stuff podcast. My name is Deontay Epps. My brother Dane Beasley is my co-host, my best friend, my brother, always. How are you doing today, my guy?
Doing pretty good, man. Doing pretty well. We'll be much better once my calamari gets here. So, you know, it's good.
Yeah.
How about yourself, man?
I'm good, man. Just, you know, in my zone and, you know, trying to weather everything going on with COVID and stuff like that. Got meetings coming up about what they're going to do with the school district and stuff like that. We talked about it, but hoping that the people in charge
make the right decision, right?
Make the right decisions. We had the opportunity. The teachers in my area had the opportunity to give their input. So I felt like that was, you know, an important thing to do. So
transparency and honesty.
Exactly. Gives them a week to kind of go through everything and hopefully they decide, you know, what the best move is. So hopefully that is something that will happen. But in sports news, the Big Ten and also the Pac-12 both announced that, hey, we ain't going nowhere. We're not playing any conference games in the fall as far as our sports are concerned. They announced that they're going to conference-only schedule for this upcoming season, man. So a lot of big games that were on tap in both conferences. And also they're saying that, you know, rumors that other conferences will follow. But they haven't made any announcement yet. But that's a big step. That's a big announcement. They're trying to get ahead of everything COVID related and try to salvage what's left or what's going to be left of a season if we have one. So what was the first thing that came in your mind when you saw that these announcements were made by both conferences?
The very first thing is very selfish and it's way out of left field. I was like, dang. I ain't going to be able to watch Trey Lance on September the 5th versus Oregon. People get real familiar with that name, Trey Lance. He's basically second coming of much taller Russell Wilson. Don't know his name because he's an FCS level quarterback from North Dakota State, but he's pretty good. And North Dakota State had Oregon as their first game of the season. So I was looking forward to that game just to see how he matched up versus Power 5 opponents.
I did see that one highlight from the end of the year from him. Like, I think SportsCenter just tweeted a quick highlight from him. But what's up with North Dakota State getting these guys, man? Carson Wentz, there was another fellow. But this Trey Lance guy might be better than Carson Wentz, because he moves, he can throw. I mean, not that Carson
not
can't.
Not injury prone.
Yeah. that's a shot at the Eagles fans. But
play styles are very similar.
He's only a sophomore, or he'll be a junior this year, correct?
Yeah.
Or am I saying that wrong?
The only thing that matters is he will be draft eligible, my friend. But you got it. Nail on the head. Those are my first thoughts. I was like, wait a minute. I'm not going to be able to see Trey, you know, my dog Trey, potential Dallas Cowboy. I'm not going to be able to see him on the big screen. So I wasn't really too concerned about anything else. If they're only going to limit it to just conference play, then we'll still be able to see some of the top guys in both conferences. But Big Ten going to miss out on seeing some of these wide receivers beat up on some of these, you know, non-conference opponents, which kind of look forward to. But we'll see some more competitive matches. But that also means that each of those games is going to mean that much more for both of the conferences. But be on the lookout for if you're a Pac-10 or Oregon homer, Panay Sewell. What did I say?
Pac-10.
I'm tripping.
Nah, you good.
Correction. It's a Pac-12. I even got the sad thing is I even have Pac-12 here in my notes, but
yeah,
bad habit. I don't think it's gonna. I mean, obviously, you'd like to see some of those smaller schools get some more TV time and as well as exposure, and just provided the opportunity to be as competitive as possible. But you got to make do with what you can, and the best thing they can do is to ensure that the safety of all the players is maybe limiting play and not less important games, but games that have less of a stake in the ultimate goal for the teams, which is to make the playoffs. So,
right. Another good point, you kind of touched on it a bit, that I didn't think about until recently, is, you know, the Big 10 already made their decision. The Pac-12 made their decision. So you have the ACC, SEC, and Big 12 left as far as the Power 5 conferences. Mm-hmm. And there's already, or there has been in previous seasons, as far as the playoff committee and how they decide which top teams are in the playoff. Okay, now they use like the big games as data points mm-hmm. to see who's better, how they rank each team. And now with these non-conference games potentially gone, and personally, in my opinion, I think it's a matter of time before the other three Power 5 conferences follow the same route.
Yeah.
How do you decide with five Power 5 conference teams and only four spots in the, you know, the playoff, how do you decide who is going to fit in those four spots out of the five? So there's already that data point where we don't have the top non-conference games now. It's going to be strictly based off of conference games. Somebody's going to get left out, like always, but it's going to be more important now.
It comes down, what it will come down to is we've, as professional sports as we know it, right now in the midst of COVID-19, is the postseason, if there is one, is altered. It's not the same as, you know, a normal postseason when there isn't a global pandemic outside. Well, can't say global pandemic outside. Well, when there is a global pandemic, so I think it'd be too much to ask for them to increase the amount of slots for playoff teams. But what they could do, first thing they have to do is be very transparent about their selection process, something that they haven't been they haven't been too open about that in the past, on how they get to these rankings, whether it's, you know, the strength of schedule or
either,
you know,
that, or it changes from week to week.
Exactly. That you'll have teams get jumped. Like, you'll have teams that completely undefeated and get jumped by a team that has that's a one loss team. So that's, we'll have less of that. But at the same time, what happens if we get to the end of the season and we have five undefeated teams, and, you know, like you said, four slots, who's the odd man out, you know? So I don't know, they have a tough job to do, but they need to do it with full transparency, in my opinion. That's the only way that the public will buy into it and the fans will buy into it, and it won't end up, the season won't end up with an asterisk.
Yeah. Do you think they would decide, like, hey, this is a weird season? Do you think they'll have a meeting and say, hey, let's change,
increase.
let's add four more teams to this thing. Make it crazy.
It would be amazing. And the day that it happens, I definitely would go play the lotto. I doubt it happens, but I'm not going to close the door on it. I'm sure that's, if they're going to go ahead and have sports, the best thing you could do is increase the opportunities for teams to get in. If you're only limiting the success, or not success, if you're only limiting playoff spots to the Power 5 teams, because I'm assuming that's exactly what's going to happen.
I mean, they still, a lot of
where does Notre Dame fall in all of this?
Well, yeah. Now, I saw jokes, people making fun of Notre Dame, and it was the Will Smith clip from when he's the last man. Episode of the Fresh Prince. Said Notre Dame when everybody, all the Power Five conferences said they're going conference only. It's just showing them staring around.
But, I thought you was going to go with, why they don't want me, man? The episode is that.
A lot of people were arguing, like, why are they making the decision so early? I'm like, it's not early. It's not. We're in July now. The season starts technically next month at the end of August. So
athletes have already started reporting to their dorms.
Yeah,
like, exactly. Emmitt Smith shipped off his son to Stanford a few days ago. So this is the perfect time to talk about that.
Yeah, and especially with numbers continuing to skyrocket, you have to make decisions, big decisions, and not everybody is going to agree with them, but leaders, you know, people who are in charge of things like this have to make decisions like that. So something to keep an eye on in the future. I'm probably our next episode, there'll probably be more power conferences that will also follow suit. They had, I mean, even the Ivy League, and I forgot to mention this, the Ivy League decided, hey, we're not going to have fall sports at all. Yeah, they said fall sports is a no-go and we'll reevaluate in January of 2021. So what the Ivy League decides doesn't necessarily represent the Power Five conferences, obviously, because the Power
Five. It's very ominous. It's very ominous, though.
But for the Ivy League to go out and say, yeah, that this is what we're going to do is, you know, them deciding based on their schools, which makes sense. And another point that I had heard is, you know, maybe that should be a permanent thing where Ivy League football is, you know, played in the spring, which would give them more airtime, more exposure, which would be, you know, I don't think that's a bad idea, but I just think, like, with other sports like basketball, how would that work?
I think they should stick to where they're at. Cause that ain't cool. Like you kind of saying, put it this way, the non-NFL leagues played in the springtime, and we already know how that was as far as getting players into that league. Like, oh no, I'm too good to play in that league, even though I'm with a team. Like, in essence, you're saying this, not saying you, but in essence, you're telling these Ivy Leagues, hey, you guys can go over there and play in the sand while we have a natural football season. And in the spring, we'll see what we can do. Get you fit you in the schedule, get you into some primetime slots. What do you say? Like, that's the kind of vibe that I'm getting from that. Not to say that there are good quality players that come from Ivy League campus or Ivy League schools, but at the same time, I think they deserve the same feel as, you know, other Power Five schools and even lower level conferences get the same luxury. So, yeah, I don't know. The one thing about this entire thing was, if this does come down to a Power Five, if this does come down to just like a Power Five only playoff, like, what does that say to all of the other conferences? I mean, I know we haven't had a team from many of the other conferences blow anybody off the map, you know, in a long time. I'm trying to think of anybody. I mean, outside of Appalachian State, but
right. And then you had like the Boise State upset of Oklahoma.
Mountain West, State. That's right. BC, with the Statue of Liberty.
Oh yeah, for
sure.
Statue
of Liberty game.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, with,
I forgot his name, but he proposed to his girlfriend cheerleader.
Is it Ian Johnson? Not Ian Johnston.
Oh, no, I think that is his name.
Okay, I just remember he had like a 41. His number was like 41 or something like that.
Yeah, and so he went weird. On to play for the Vikings for a little bit with the conference only system, or if all the Power Five conferences go conference only, there's no way that a group of five conference team is getting into the playoff, man.
And then we're back at the drawing board again, like trying to figure out what's the right number of playoff spots. And it's just interesting.
Yeah. Right. And this, I mean, there's still time before, I don't think they're going to make any decisions about the playoff. I think actually the playoff committee came out and said they weren't, I mean, they're going to use the same data points, which we could take that with a grain of salt because of what we discussed earlier. But Yeah, we'll see, man. I know for sure the big thing is those big time conference games that will probably get canceled, or non-conference games. I know Baylor had a game scheduled for Ole Miss to start the year, which, you know,
nice.
It's not officially canceled, but, you know, with the way things looking, it could end up going that way. And that's, just think about all the money lost, like all that stuff. And I know that's why they're trying to not cancel stuff yet, but I mean, it's only a matter of time.
I wanted to see Plumlee run all over y'all. That's what I wanted to see.
Nah, bro.
I mean, he did it to LSU.
In Houston at Reliant Stadium too.
Oh man.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you know what? Is football, or no, let me rephrase this. The South runs football. We know this. So I don't think I'm gonna make a bold statement here. I'm gonna say the remaining conferences are going to continue with their full schedule. I'm gonna go with that. Based on what you tickled a very interesting brain cell at the top of my noggin by bringing up the matchup that y'all have, because you're an up and coming football program, or coming back out from your previous staycation that you all had at the top of Mount Olympus, and you know, you were brought down to the bottom, and y'all making your way back to the top. That is a huge, 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 huge shift in momentum for y'all to have prime time slots, advertising money, recruits. That's the best way for you to increase all that is by beating an SEC team like Ole Miss. So, I'll roll with that.
Yeah. I mean, and the big knock against Baylor, you know, them not having a strong non-conference. This was the first year we played a Power Five conference team to start the year. Like, so, and to have stuff like this happen is just crazy. But
yeah, he was going to run all over y'all still, though.
Yeah.
You can't tell me y'all defense going to slow that man down.
That's what I got for you, Dane.
Stop it. Put some power.
Okay.
Moving on, man. DeSean Jackson.
Oh, is this the dumbass segment of the day?
Yeah. Okay. What sound can I play for this? This one? Nah.
You got a sound bite from old dude from That 70s Show? The dad?
No, I don't have it.
You big dummy. From
he'll get this. Anyways, so I don't even know where to start with DeSean Jackson.
It's ignorant. Let's start there. One of the most ignorant things you could possibly do in the middle of
What did he do?
DeSean Jackson went, I guess it was an Instagram post. I wouldn't know. I don't have Instagram, but it's, you know, the social media age, everything travels so quickly. It popped up on Twitter and I seen it. I was like, what is this? I looked at it and it appeared to be some sort of writing, basically pitting Jewish people against black people in the words of Hitler. Some words that were credited to Hitler. In short, I'm not even going.
Not to cut you off, but just how does that sound like from the listener's point? Like if you heard what Dane just said, like black people getting put against Jewish people with Hitler at the helm, like
yeah, and Hitler's the author. Like that's like right. No, that is not where we're at, man. Like what purpose does this serve?
Right, and the particular quote in question wasn't even from Hitler, but it still was anti-Semitic, you know, type thing. And just, so that I don't understand what he thought he was trying to do. Like in the time in our world right now, like that's not the move to make. Like
nope.
For one, you're making a distraction to what's important and what is like a movement at this time. Like,
you need as many allies as possible. You did just the opposite of that.
Right, exactly. And so taking a distraction from what's important now with the Black Lives Matter movement, with some stuff that was just stupid and out of line. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Eagles penalized him, I guess fined him for whatever. And
they probably chewed him out behind doors too.
Yeah. And Julian Edelman apparently reached out to him and they've talked. He posted on Twitter. He talked to Deshaun about the situation and they're making progress. Deshaun also talked to a Holocaust survivor about his comments and apparently learned a perspective, which it's okay, but like, man, you got to realize. For one. And then the other thing is, why did it have to take you to make this comment to get to that point? Right. Let's take out the part where you say something out of line like this and automatically get to the ending where you make a solution or you learn more without having to make that comment. Like, if you don't know what the hell you're talking about, shut up.
Don't say it. Don't post it online. How about you seek out some understanding? Like, hey, check this out. Hey, boom. Deontay, do you think it would offend anybody if I went on Twitter and said people who have, you know, I don't know, eat pepperoni on the pizza are stupid?
I think that's not a good idea. That might be offensive, my guy.
Now, I'm not saying I'm sitting here to try to compare, you know, apples and oranges here, because obviously food preference versus, I don't know, making a horrible use of posting some very questionable literature about an entire group of people and pitting them against another group of people. I don't mean to make those two, draw comparisons to the two, but simply by saying it, Google is very free. If you're very concerned, or if you have any type of concern about something that you're going to post and the validity of it, you should just seek out Google. And if you're still at a pause, then maybe you should seek out maybe one of the smartest people you know and see how that sounds, because chances are, if you have pause about it, it's probably not the best thing for you to say. And it probably is very offensive. And that's where I guess it could lead to you educating yourself to prevent yourself from making yourself look like an ass. So, but Deontay, it's Philly and they have a reputation to uphold. And that reputation is being the armpit of the NFL. So,
yeah. So this is what the Eagles said, came out with a statement. This has been a difficult and emotional week for our community and organization. The Philadelphia Eagles do not tolerate hate towards any individual or group. We believe in respect and equality for all races, ethnicities, and faiths. We, as an organization, want to help be an instrument for positive change. This can only occur through strong, deliberate actions and a commitment to learn and grow. We have had a number of constructive conversations over the last few days, not only with Deshaun Jackson, but also with many other players, members of the organization, and leaders in the community. This has led us to the point where we and he are ready to take the next steps. We have penalized Deshaun for conduct detrimental to the team. He accepted these consequences and apologized. In our many conversations with him, it has been made clear that this is only the beginning. We have discussed a concrete plan for how we and he can help or heal moving forward. He understands that in order to remain on the team, he must also commit to supporting his words with actions. I know that was the thing people were talking about, cutting him and all that stuff, which... Right. I mean, everything in this climate could have happened. Like,
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it'd be a little like, oh man, yikes! You don't want to bring up the whole Riley Cooper incident, but at the same time, they're two separate instances, both offensive, both dumb, both ignorant. But at the same time, it's like this is where we're at, unfortunately. And 2020, people still have to be educated about things like this. So,
yeah, they basically end the thing by saying we must continue to fight against anti-Semitism and all forms of discrimination while not losing sight of the important battle against systemic racism. And that last quote or that last sentence right there is what I was talking about. Like, this is a distraction for him to come out and say something like this. It's just taking the light off what's important right now in the culture and everything that's going on in the world right now. It's dumb. And, you know, he said he learned from it and he's taking the steps, but we got to get to the point, Dane, and I know you agree with me on this. Like, let's not take or have an action like this get to a point where you need to learn. Let's take out that part where you say something stupid for you to have to learn, if that makes sense. But
And that's a good way. I love a good segue, Deontay. Love a good segue, because I'm pretty sure you're about to say, and this wasn't even one of the dumbest things that DeSean Jackson's done. Not even going to talk about, you know, him fumbling right before walking into a touchdown or running backwards 20 or 30 yards and on a punt return and fumbling there. We're not going to talk about those two instances, but hopefully this is the most ignorant and dumb thing that he does in his lifetime. Truly. I really hope it's the last ignorant thing that he does, or the most ignorant thing that he does, because that means he learned something from all this. So,
yep. Couldn't said it better, bro. One thing we can talk about, though.
getting paid.
Patrick Mahomes, boy.
You should have had that.
Money. Oh yeah, facts. Facts. Patrick Mahomes cashed out, y'all.
Yeah,
obviously the highest deal ever in NFL history. 10 years, $503 million, half a billy.
With a B.
Does he deserve it, Dane?
Well, that's a really small amount. That's just projecting. What they're doing right now is projecting. But in about 3-4 years, that deal is going to look really awful. But yes, he deserves every nickel and penny dollar of that deal. But it's still underpaid. He's still under, based on what we've seen so far from his very short career, he is severely underpaid.
Right, and you don't really realize that right now. And I know one of our earlier episodes we talked about, I think it was right after he won the Super Bowl, of him being the GOAT. And yeah. I mean, the GOAT is a term, you know, that can be, it's up to the person to decide how they want it. Like, you can have the GOAT in terms of being the best right now,
right,
rather than being the best of all time, because obviously his career is young. He could have a, God forbid, season ending, career ending injury, you know, and it ends right here. But right now he's the best quarterback in football.
Yeah.
And the Chiefs are like, we're going to pay you like the best quarterback in football, the best player in football. Yeah. And so I can honestly say, as a Broncos fan, damn. So, you know, I'm happy for Mahomes. He's a great guy. And my Broncos are going to have to deal with him for 10 plus years. But I think he deserves it, man. He's proved that he is the best in the league, you know, right now, and why not get paid like it? Sheesh. And so for this contract, Dane, I know we didn't even get to touch on Dak's contract and him signing the franchise franchise tag. How do you think this plays on Dak? I'm not saying he's going to get paid like Dak, but do you think that Dak's looking like that and like, okay, do I want to look for a 10-year deal, something like that? Or what do you think that he's thinking right now?
All right, so let me break it down to you like this. Sometime in May, I am on the record of stating the Cowboys would be foolish to allow Patrick Mahomes to be signed before Dak Prescott. Not because Dak Prescott is better than Patrick Mahomes. That's not true. It's nowhere near being anywhere as good as Patrick Mahomes. But the way that quarterback contracts work is the next guy gets paid the most. It's Patrick Mahomes just reset the more. Patrick Mahomes, I think his average goes to about, I think it's what, 40, is it $45 million, just about? Or it's like 37.5 or something like that.
It's a little bit, well, originally it came out and said it was 10 years, 450 mil. Mm-hmm. And then it was another, like, the that day it was crazy because the numbers kept changing. And then towards the end, they said 10 years, 503 million with, dang, it was a term that they used.
It's like, he has like several options to opt out of the, or they have several options to opt out of the contract after so many years. Yeah. Like,
it's built like some incentives built in and stuff like that. It's supposed to be friendly to where he can, like you said, renegotiate down the line.
Okay.
But it's about 45 mil a year, if okay. not a little more
so,
than that.
So for the sake of this conversation, we'll say $45 million.
Okay. So
the what I went on the record to say was Cowboys would be very stupid to wait to sign Dak Prescott, or they'd look very foolish if the Chiefs end up signing Patrick Mahomes before Dak Prescott gets signed. Because all that means is his agent is going to be rubbing his hands like Birdman saying, yes, we got him. What we've seen over the course of the last 15, 20 years is each quarterback getting paid more than the last quarterback. It's just the way that it works. You're not paid on, you know, what you can do as a quarterback. You're paid on essentially what the market dictates. And the market's reset every time a guy signs. So with that being said, if the Cowboys would have just reached their 4-year deal with Dak Prescott, and the rumors were that he was asking for somewhere towards $37, $38 million a year. And it was only 4 years, but the Cowboys wanted 5 years so that the average would be a little bit lower. Dak wanted 4 years with the opportunity to re-up his contract, given that the cap would go up and that would allot them a little bit more money to flex around. And here we are, sitting looking stupid. Him playing on this franchise tag, which means his franchise tag is, I think it's like $37.5 million. So that's great. However, that's a $37 million cap hit. And if he plays on the cap again, it's going to be even higher because that, of course, that average of this franchise tag, or the franchise tag, which represents the average of the quarterback salaries, is going to be even higher because I'm assuming there's going to be even more quarterbacks that are going to be signing between now and the next time he signs another franchise tag. So I am just going on the record to state the Cowboys, just like they normally do, have proven to the world that they suck in contract negotiations.
I'll talk about Deshaun Jackson, or not Deshaun Jackson. I'll talk about Lamar Jackson. He is going to, it may not necessarily be a half a Billy, but it's going to be up there as well. I wouldn't even be surprised because Baltimore is one of those organizations that really depends on loyalty, along with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I could see them also giving Lamar Jackson a 10-year deal, 9-year deal, something high like that, mm-hmm. something nearing that Mahomes range, because he's an MVP candidate, or former MVP as well, defending MVP.
Yep.
And if he has another year like he just did this past season, and if he gets, he doesn't have to win the Super Bowl, if he gets the Ravens into the Super Bowl, he's going to be cashing out as well.
Yep.
As far as Deshaun Watson goes, he'll be up there. I'm not going to say he's going to get paid 45 mil, half a Billy, but
right.
without Deshaun Watson, that franchise is dumpster juice, as you would say. It's Deshaun Watson and no one else. The coach can go, everybody can go, but Watson, especially in that division, mm-hmm. he's going to have them in the playoffs every single season.
Right. Either that or on the cusp of a wild card spot.
Right. Right. I mean, they added a playoff team in each conference, so you know, that only increases the possibility of that happening again. And, you know, they got rid of his best target, one of the best receivers, if not the best receiver in the NFL. DeAndre, I'm right there with you, bro. I think he's the best receiver in the NFL. And, like, why? Like, if you're getting rid of Hopkins, I mean, you can only – the only way I see you keeping Watson is giving him a nasty, like when I say nasty, I mean insane contract mm-hmm. for him to pay, you know? So
we'll see.
Deshaun Watson is going to touch up, you know, in that area. And it's going to be like, probably like for the next. And first, let me preface by saying, and Dane, I know you agree with me on this. It is we are in a this era of quarterbacks we've never seen before. And with Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, Lamar Jackson, of course, those are brothers. Those are black quarterbacks, but they are elite.
They are great quarterbacks. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think we've ever seen these elite black quarterbacks on top of the league. This number, like, you know what I'm saying? This high number of quarterbacks being at the top. Like, when you think of the top quarterbacks in the league, if you want to name five of them, three of them are going to be those guys that I name, at least three, maybe four, maybe all
if
five.
If you don't have at least two or three of these guys in your top fives, then you, the way that you're evaluating football is very wrong.
Right. Like, am I wrong in that? Like, have you, like, refresh my memory? Like, has there ever been a time where we've had this? Like, these guys on
at
top.
At one time? In one season?
At one time.
Nope.
Right.
Nope.
And so that's something to appreciate. Like, they're changing the game, dominating the game. They're about to cash out.
They're playing the game the way it's intended to be played.
Yeah. Or, like, you know how to stop play. You know, he has that it factor that.
And, you know, one thing that all of them have in common, they're all multi-sport athletes.
Yeah.
So, parents that are out there, or just people who eventually more than likely will possibly have children, put your kids in multiple sports at a time. They'll increase their odds of being a, I don't know, half a Billy paid quarterback.
Maybe you can get that.
This guy. The best thing about that contract is Andy Reid gave him his word that he would, of course, remain the coach. I mean, hopefully that there's an agreement with the ownership that he will remain the coach throughout the remainder of the contract. That team doesn't have that many holes to fill. So with the Chiefs basically getting the second coming of Brian Westbrook and the addition of Willie Gay Jr. and Lucas Niang, the tackle from TCU, they are going to be offensively stronger than they were last year, which is very scary. And defensively, that's more than likely where all the holes are going to be at. And of course, if they should re-up the contract with what's the DT's name? Is it
Chris Jones?
Okay, yeah. So the league anybody that has a tinfoil hat on saying, well, if he gets paid that much, then that means he's not going to be able to build a team around. No, I wouldn't say that. That defense is going to be fine. They're going to put the people in place where they need to be at, and we're going to see them consistently make the playoffs for a very long time. Unfortunately for you, Deontay, that doesn't fare too well. But
yeah, I was just going to say my Broncos are trying to keep up. You know, that's why we drafted Jerry Judy, KJ Hamler. You know, we're trying to get weapons to. Because you're going to have to score points to beat the Chiefs. You're going to have to score at least 31, 35 points to beat them and hope you get some stops on defense. That's the only way.
I have a chance.
You're going to beat them, you know? So, shout out to Pat Mahomes. Shout out to Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson. I just sat here and was thinking, like, man, these guys are on top of their game. Black athletes, black quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Redefining the game. Elite guys doing it their own way. So, big shout out to them for real. In other NFL news, the NFL has banned jersey exchanges in 2020 as the league attempts to play through the coronavirus pandemic, according to a set of protocols distributed to teams Wednesday and obtained Thursday by ESPN. Jersey exchanges have gained in popularity in recent years, and their elimination was met with immediate derision from some prominent players on social media. San Francisco 49ers quarterback Richard Sherman tweeted that it was a perfect example of NFL thinking in a nutshell, noting that players will engage in a full contact game only to find that it isn't safe to exchange jerseys. Houston Texans quarterback Deshaun Watson tweeted that it was damn silly. Okay, so NFL's like, bro, for 60 minutes, we're going to have y'all sweating on each other, tackling, spitting blood on each other. for 60 minutes. But hey, after the game, nah, bro. That's social distance. Yeah, after
a little 3 minutes of y'all spend exchanging jerseys and high-fiving each other, y'all have to cut that out. Because we lose the money from the jerseys that y'all exchanging. And we don't want to spread a possible contraction of this COVID. Was it COVID-19? COVID-19. So, yeah, this the NFL proven again why they're the worst officiated professional sporting league. Like, they're so far behind everyone else when it comes to stuff like this. Like, yes. This is stupid.
There's other things that are mentioned as right. far as the 6 feet of separation, which I get for media.
Yeah.
Photography reporters, all that stuff. But for the players that have been touching each other for 60 minutes, that part I don't get.
I
don't know that. Maybe they're doing too much at this point, but
yeah, they're grasping at straws here. Like, these men are literally having car accidents every 13 seconds. Literally for 60 minutes, every 13 seconds they're having car accidents. The least you could allow them to do is exchange some jerseys and autograph them and, you know, say, hey man, how's the family doing, and keep it moving on national television. Because you know what that allows for? Good sportsmanship.
Yeah. My question is this. What if they still exchange jerseys? Like, they just going to get fined, right? That's all they could do.
Yeah. I mean, so many people going to do it. I don't know. Like, I guess they could still do it privately, but it just takes away from us seeing it on TV. You know, seeing those moments where the, you know, previous or former teammates or people who are actually brothers, or players who are actually brothers, or, you know, ex-teammates, like that type of stuff. You like to see that after the game. It kind of brings it brings the game back to this being just a game. These are humans at the end of the day. But, you know, it is what it is. I ain't going to gripe too much about it, because then I'm going to come off as negative Nancy or whatever. So let me just chill out on it.
This is our NFL bang segment. Like, we're just ripping it up right now, because this next story is awesome.
Hit him with the definition of escrow real quick, but
I was gonna ask you to do that. Shoot.
I got you. I came prepared.
Okay. Read this paragraph first.
Do what you do, man. Do what you do.
I'm gonna give you the alley-oop. So it says NFL's 35% escrow account bid likely a non-starter, but player pay has to adjust. Tuesday's news that the NFL asked the NFLPA to place 35% of players' pay into escrow in 2020 as a hedge against massive declines in local revenues predictably landed like a poorly reviewed college prospect. No chance of making it. So what's going on, bro?
So escrow, boom. So it's a contractual arrangement in which a third party receives and disperses money or property for the primary transacting parties. Basically, there's going to be an entity that says, hey, we're going to need to hold on to some of this money. No, I'm not going to spend it. It's just in case we lose a lot of money on the back end. We want to make sure that we're not forking out too much money in the current season. You'll understand. You're multimillionaires. You'll be fine. And it's not at all, you know, I don't know, we're not hypocrites or anything like that, because most of us are billionaires, so it's not that big of a deal. And even though we're NFL owners that don't have to pay for our stadiums, we should be the ones footing the bill, but we're not. So it should be fine. Right, guys? Cool. 35%. Give me that. So here we see the NFL owners being cheap, and instead of being the end-all, be-all like they normally are and being the final voice, they want to take this opportunity to strong-arm the NFLPA. Now, nobody could have... Plenty of professionals estimated and had the... What is the best way to put it? Plenty of professionals, your doctors and your data guys, there was plenty of projections that were put out with what COVID-19 could do to the United States of America and the world. And a lot of that was taken with a grain of salt. So before the CBA was put into place, or the official, was it March, right? It was like the middle of March. CBA was signed. There was plenty. That was at the, I want to say probably the peak of, not the peak, right before the peak of COVID-19, where some sort of language could have been discussed between both sides to determine what could happen in the case of the NFL losing so much money because we don't have football. But it wasn't taken as serious as it was supposed to on the professional level. We've seen that. Here we are. And the players are going to be the ones that have to pay the price for it. And that's not cool, in my honest opinion.
To go along with that, man, you've seen it in, like, not only the NFL, but they're
in the majors,
you know, in Major League Baseball. They had their long disagreement. Like, with the situations like these where games are canceled, money is always going to be, like, the top concern. So there's always a battle between the league and its players. And, like, we've seen that a lot the past few months. And so there's, like, always a struggle to get the advantage, right? Mm-hmm. And I see Drew Rosenhaus, famous agent Drew Rosenhaus, put out a tweet about it. He said, "This is an absurd ask by the NFL. If anything, the players deserve a bonus for playing with the added risk of contracting COVID-19 and potentially passing it on to their families." Like, an added health risk.
Yep.
And they're trying to take a percentage or this much of a percentage from the players. Like, we know how much these owners, like, we know they're making bank, man.
Yeah, this is not their only investment. This is just probably one of the biggest returns on their investments. This isn't their only one. Many of them have their foot and hands in other ventures. So let's not be fooled. This is nothing to do about player safety. This is all about the color green. That is all this is about.
Yeah. And we've been saying that for, like, every episode, you know, like, why are they pushing on with this, with everything going on? You know, it's about the money, trying to get what they can get. So,
and you know what? I forgot all about this, but I'm going to bring it up now. This is about money, because if it wasn't about money, why the heck are we trying to put together language and put together the opportunity to get advertisements on the first few rows of each seats to ensure that there is no type of contact from fans to enter the stadiums? Like, this is all about money. It's always been about money. It's not about player safety and player health. Let's continue to call that out, because this is exactly what it is. But I don't know. I honestly don't know how this is going to play out. I hope that it plays out in the players' favor, because I would hate to see the love of their, you know, livelihood taken away from them because, or a percentage of it taken away from them because of owners not thinking this thing through and not footing the bill like they're supposed to. So I don't know, G. I can't call it.
Like you said earlier, I should have played the money by, and that the OJ. Yeah. The OJ's made But you sent me a poll, my guy, from Get Up on ESPN. What was that poll about, man? What was it talking about?
So the poll was conducted with about 50. No, no, not about. It was 50 NFL executives, scouts, and players. And they were tasked to rank the top 10 running backs for the upcoming season. They've done this with quarterbacks, and they've done this with offensive tackles as well. But the most polarizing position, not polarizing, but probably the position that's lost its value the most over the last 5 to 10 years, or no, just the last 20 years or so, has been the running back. The most undervalued and unappreciated position in all of football. We know that. So it's always interesting to see what NFL people or personnel say about who is the guy, because we already know who the face of is, as far as quarterbacks are concerned, or the quarterback is concerned. The face of the NFL is going to be Patrick Mahomes. But it's always a revolving door of who the guy is, the best running back in the NFL or the number one running back in the NFL, because it changes. It's most of the time it's your league leading rusher or the guy who does the most or the one who scores the most touchdowns. But that line is being blurred because the success of most of your NFL teams isn't predicated on the productivity of the running back, but it's based on how good your passing game is, or how, you know, elite your defense is, or just which team has Patrick Mahomes. So I thought it was pretty interesting to see the way that this turned out. The top 10 listening. I, of course, my number one running back going into this new year, of course, is Saquon Barkley. It's a shame that he has to wear that disgusting, horrible blue uniform, but at the same time, it's a thing of beauty watching him do his thing, carrying the entire team on his back last year, as he's going to have to do this year too. But of course, as always, it's always a fun thing to see and always a fun thing to argue about the other nine spots. So I thought it was a good point to bring that up.
Right. And so for the listeners, the list that we have, it is Saquon Barkley, number one, Christian McCaffrey, two, Zeke at three, Alvin Kamara, four, Derrick Henry, five, Dalvin Cook, six, Nick Chubb, seven, Joe Mixon, eight, Josh Jacobs, nine, and Le'Veon Bell closing it out in the top 10. First glance, I won't say if I agree or disagree right just yet, but I will say,
look, man, it's our podcast, brother. We can do whatever we want. You can do what you want to do.
What I do notice in common, at least with the top four out of the five guys, is that they're versatile.
Yeah.
They can run and they can catch the ball out of the backfield. You can line them up at receiver with Saquon, McCaffrey, Zeke, and Alvin Kamara. Derrick Henry, workhorse. Not so much. Yeah. He literally carried the Titans to the AFC Championship last year, so I can see why he's ranked fifth right here.
Pay the man.
Exactly. They need to fix that because
that team does not go without him.
Yeah, exactly. Because you got Ryan Tannehill. No disrespect to Ryan, but game manager.
Shoot, he'd be nice. All the disrespect to Ryan Tannehill.
Well, I'm sure he's a nice guy, Dan. You don't want to just throw him under the bus.
Okay.
But Josh Jacobs, I will say at nine.
Yeah, that's rich. That's rich.
You think he's too high?
I think he's way too high. In my honest opinion. But this is, you got the floor right now. I'm going to let you do your thing. Okay. Do your thing.
I would just say, because the only reason I've seen him, because he's in our division and he had good games against Denver. Le'Veon, I remember used to see Le'Veon in the top five, but he's gotten a little older, lost a step, hasn't really played a lot. He's in a
new
system,
new team, new coach that doesn't like him. So Le'Veon should be higher in my opinion, but that's just me.
Yeah. What do you think about the list?
So I had some issues with the list. If we're talking about, I guess it just depends on how you define the top 10. Some people define it as the guy who makes the most impact on the game, the guy who can do it all, the guy with the most rush yards, the guy with the most rushing touchdowns, the guy that can, you know, rush and receive. It just depends on how you're doing it. In my opinion, I would preface it with if this running back is not on the team, how successful can our team be? Type of deal. That's how important is that particular running back to the team, and that in no particular order or in a particular order. That's how I would phrase it.
I think mine would be like the versatility, because you're in a game where like the passing game is probably more dominant than ever aside from a few teams, but a running back being able to be lined up as a receiver, I think that's vital, but go ahead.
Oh, but you brought up a really good point. The passing game. I bet you, out of 50 of those 50 NFL guys, I don't think half of them even thought about the passing game as it pertains to pass blocking.
Yeah, good point.
One of the most efficient ways to keep your defense on the heels is setting up play action. And one of the best ways to do that is, of course, faking the handoff to your running back and the running back standing in there, sticking their nose in there, hitting the face mask, putting the crown of the helmet in the face mask of a linebacker, or, you know, chop blocking a defensive end. Like, that is such an underrated part of the game that some of these guys on this list haven't even developed yet. But what I'll say is I'm still going to have Saquon in number one. Number two, more than likely, is going to be Alvin Kamara or Derrick Henry. Number three, it's a toss-up between Christian McCaffrey and Zeke. And the only reason I say that is because Christian McCaffrey, he is in the right age of the NFL where his exceptional route running and soft hands are very vital. But at the same time, we're talking about the full body of work here, or used, as you put it, a versatile player. So with that in mind, that's kind of a toss up between him and Zeke, because Zeke, although might not, you know, be the best receiver, Zeke is a godlike pass blocker. Like, we've seen, I mean, as a Cowboy fan, I've seen myself just how much he's progressed in that, you know, in that space in his football career. But anyways, where it gets kind of muddy for me is 6 through 10.
I had trouble naming like running backs that could be in this list. Like, if I disagree with 6 through 10,
Aaron Jones for me,
my boy Phillip Lindsay.
True.
Because I was talking about versatility as well. That's he could true. Be put in this list.
And that's the bad thing, bro. They're not the face of the NFL anymore, bro.
Yeah, that and like you said, you talk about how you define what a top running back is. It can right. change from person to person. So it's always good to have debates like this and see who's the top, especially for those that love fantasy football.
And yeah.
There's always going to be a debate who's the best fantasy running back and all of that. So
you got three. You get. Let's say you got you're doing your fantasy draft right now for your fantasy team. You have the number one pick. Which of these running backs are you taking first, based on their body of work from last season? Based on the body of work from last season, and I want you to give me your pick on based on their body of work for their entire career. Who is your running back number one?
I'm gonna go Saquon. Number one, it's barely over Christian McCaffrey. I love Christian McCaffrey so much. They put him, I think they put him on punt return, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he was on punt return. He returned some punts.
I think that adds a little bit. I'm going to think in fantasy terms right now, just because he has
a punt return touchdown, can't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I'm just thinking in terms of
touches.
In more spots to get the ball.
Gotcha.
Yeah. You know, they run Wildcat with them. I don't know how they're going to use them this year. They got a whole new offensive system, offensive coordinator Joe Brady from LSU, Matt Rhule running the show. I don't know how they're going to use them, but I'm pretty sure he's going to be.
You can count on Teddy Bridgewater to check that bad boy down. So Christian McCaffrey is going to get at least 216 touches by week 8.
So. It's close. And that's one of the reasons, Dane, I'm going to pick Saquon, mm-hmm. just because I'm not sure how Christian's going to be in this offense. Not being able to, everything's still kind of new to him, and with mm-hmm. everything going on with COVID and all this, it's so much uncertainty. So Saquon's been in the system before. He knows the quarterback. Daniel Jones is getting better, apparently.
He's going to cut down them fumbles on turnovers.
Right.
He'll be fine. He'll be an average, guy.
It's close. Mm. Now, what I thought you were going to ask me is, out of this list, pick three that I would run with, or, you know, like if I need it. Mm. And I would go Barkley, McCaffrey, and probably Zeke.
Mm. I got you. Well, to your surprise, my list, or my number one guy, is not on this list. My number one running back, I'm going with Lamar Jackson. I'm kidding. I'm just kidding. For those of you who don't know, Lamar Jackson, he always uses that as a punchline, is that, you know, he's just a running back because of people projecting him
being
a running
back. Pretty good for a running back.
Yeah, exactly. You get the joke. All right, I'll see myself out. No, but my number one guy, and I should have went first because now it seems like I'm being a copycat, but I'm going with Saquon. Well, no, I already said it first. You copied off of me. Saquon Barkley. He is going to carry the load of that New York Giants offense with a young coach, young quarterback. I think he's going to be the leader of that offense, or continue to be the leader of that offense. So my only ask of Saquon is just take care of himself so he can continue to play 16 games a season. I don't know who I'd pick as my number two and three. I love Zeke to death, but he has some, as far as where the offense is going to be at with this new coach we got, and then where Dak might be at playing essentially on a contract year. I don't know what his touches are going to be like, but I mean, he had a, you know, not too bad year. But I think I might go with a wild card here and see with, I'm going with Alvin Kamara as my number two. And then my number three is going to be Ezekiel Elliott. And that's only because we are going to see, this is Drew Brees' last year, right? He's got his TV deal waiting for him after this season. So they are going to be, or not they, I think Drew is going to be playing some hero ball. He's going to have some things to prove. This is last season. He wants it to be pretty. And with that being said, Alvin is a very pivotal part of that offense. So if I'm a betting man, I'm going to go with Alvin Kamara being the second fantasy football league player, offensive player this year.
Yeah. That's a good point, man.
So, yeah. And then, of course, three, Zeke's going to do Zeke things. So he going to eat. He going to eat. Yeah.
So in NBA news, the NBA is scheduled to start at the end of July. You got players coming into the bubble in Orlando right now. Mm. And there has been a lot of videos from players at the bubble about the meals. I don't know if you've seen that, Dane, about what they've been fed.
Well,
then J.R. Smith went live on Instagram and was naming very exotic meals. So who knows what's really going on. But
ain't no telling.
A big concern that's come out about the bubble, you know, I think we mentioned before that these players are getting these COVID-19 rings that they're wearing that, you know, it's very advanced.
That's pretty dope.
It is. It's supposed to show symptoms or alert when you're getting symptoms of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with technology like that, that's going towards the players and with everything that's going on in the world right now. With, I think I read a story that the U.S. surpassed 3 million cases of COVID. So it's kind of been some back and forth about, you know, these players getting all these testing priority things when stuff is going on in the world. And so I have this article from NBC Sports, and it says COVID testing priority, a potential issue for NBA. With teams making their way into the Orlando bubble this week, the NBA is surely crossing its fingers or perhaps even looking for some divine assistance.
Mm-hmm.
Months of planning have led to this moment. All 22 teams have successfully arrived in Orlando. The early arrivers have started practicing, and the others hope to follow shortly. Inter-squad scrimmages are said to begin in less than 2 weeks. So one of the main questions being asked, it says, is the NBA being prioritized over the general population in a time of crisis?
Yes.
The entire NBA operation sits on a foundation of daily testing and then processing results of those tests quickly. Early in the pandemic, the NBA was concerned about having enough tests to administer that daily regimen. While supply issues appear to have been resolved, processing those tests is not quite as simple. Unlike MLB, so far teams have not seen significant delays or problems receiving test results, according to sources that spoke with NBC Sports. So basically, it goes on to, you know, there's some questions about NBA players receiving all this testing daily, but there are people in the world right now, in our country specifically, that don't have access to testing like this or have to wait overnight, hours, days to get testing.
Yeah.
And so, Dane, how do you feel about that? I heard you say yes to the question I asked in this article, which says, is the NBA being prioritized over the general population in a time of crisis?
Yeah. We're talking about a multi-billion dollar entity. Yes. They are being prioritized, unfortunately. As a sports fan, it pains me to say this. I mean, I'm a human fan first, but as a sports fan, it makes you cringe a little bit. You know, we have shortages here and there with testing, and then we have some individuals who can't even be tested because of, you know, not being able to take off work or not being able to get to a testing center, or just the struggle of not being the insurance coverage or lack thereof doesn't offer them the opportunity to be tested. So you have a number of hoops that people have to jump through to even get to just the test. We're talking about just the testing here. And then here the NBA comes. I don't know who designed it or what powers it be that these NFL owners or NFL or NBA owners and NBA personnel have access to that gets them to, I'm assuming these rings are quite the pretty penny. I'm not sure what the price tag looks like, but for them to have access to them, it does look a little hypocritical. given that we do have state officials that are hospitalized and state officials that are quarantining themselves. But at what point do we draw the line? At what point does America, United States of America, draw the line and say, you know what, we might be doing a little bit too much? And we've seen it so many times throughout the last few months of sports overextending themselves in the name of sports and capitalism. So I don't know, G.
Right. And yeah, that last part is what I was going to say. What you always seem to mention, which makes sense, is it's all about the dollar bill. It's
always.
And for them to be able to put on this product for the consumer.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, things like this are going to have to be prioritized. It's wrong in a sense, because you have people out here struggling, like I mentioned, to get testing done. You got 3 million cases. U.S. is leading in for coronavirus. You got cases in Texas, Florida, Arizona surging more or higher, should I say, every day. And just situations like this is sad, because it's sad, but it's reality in the sense that capitalism, man.
Yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm not trying to say that my life is as important as, you know, starting point guard for the, you know, I don't know, Orlando Magic or anything like that, but I don't bring in, my job title doesn't expect, or my boss doesn't expect me to help bring in billions of dollars worth of revenue each season. So, of course, you know, in comparison to those guys, you know, my occupation isn't that important if we're looking at it, you know, from apples to apples. But at the same time, it's just like, what can we say or do? This, the damage has already been done with them, you know, making the right deals with whatever pharmaceutical engineering entity created these rings that they have. And then, of course, the testing process that they're going to go through, which seems very tiring, how often they have to be tested. And of course, the quick turnaround for the results to ensure that there isn't any type of spread of a positive case. So I don't know, G, but in 10 years, we're going to look back at this, Lord willing, in 10 years, we're going to look back at this and be like, damn, the United States of America really dropped the ball, and it was all because of the love of sports type of deal. That's one of the things we'll have to think about, in all honesty.
With everything, with the cases rising, we'll say it again on this episode, like we do every episode since the pandemic started. Wear a mask.
Yeah.
Wash your hands.
Wash your hands.
Do everything you can to bring down this curve.
Yeah.
If you want
flat damn
sports low. Back, if you enjoy sports, do your part so you can see sports on TV in a month, 2 months, 3 months, and forever after that. Do what you can, man. And if you don't want to do your part, stay at home. You have a choice. Make the right choice.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's what we're saying.
And that's all we got.
So for our put on segment, Dane, I'm going to do it a little different.
Uh-oh,
usually I play Young Jeezy.
Oh, this is a different song. I think I know what song you're going to play too.
Yeah.
Go ahead, hit it. Hit it.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
You know, Stevie always got a dramatic buildup.
Facts. It was like a minute before it got to the hook. Oh, I did not know that.
Oh, yeah.
But happy birthday to my dad. It's the big 6-0, man. Appreciate you so much, more than you know. And, you know, I know you're going to have an amazing day. Whenever you hear this, like I said, I know you're a few episodes behind, but whenever you hear this, happy birthday. I've talked to you already on the phone, of course.
That's the most Mr. Epstein I've ever seen in my life. I know you're a few episodes behind.
My mom told me, he told me, I heard the last episode, but he was literally like an episode behind. My mom had to tell him. So, happy birthday to my dad, to the listeners that actually know my dad, and the people that have already reached out to him. You know, he appreciates it. I showed him the messages from earlier on social media, and he really appreciates it. So Happy birthday, man.
Happy birthday, Mr. Epps, man. Shout out to you, Mr. Epps. You've been a great, 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 great role model, not only for myself, but just, you know, many of the other friends and family that Deontay has. And you've always been a beacon of light, positivity, faith, and integrity. So we appreciate you for being born. Make sure you have a good day. And I still ain't going to forget the fact that you left us and you went to go be a Carolina Panthers fan that season that Cam won the MVP. I ain't forget. You was giving me all your little paraphernalia.
I still got that picture.
Yeah.
I got that picture. Yeah, the Panthers hat, yeah. Panthers tank, blue shoes.
He left. He left.
That's so funny.
It was too funny. I still got the little wine glass he gave me, too, with the Dallas Cowboys logo. I'm keeping that mug, too. But shout out to you, Mr. Epps. We appreciate you, man.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Mr. Epps.
Yes, sir. With that, we'll bring this thing to a close. Remember, we are on social media at DEPS Right Steps, and Dane is at DaneBTX. Also on Instagram and Twitter at Duo SNS Podcast.
Yes, sir.
And we also have our website, www.theduosportsandstuffpodcast.com. And we've also added, I think I mentioned this on the last episode, if you want to donate to your boys, we got a PayPal on there. We have Cash App on there. We have Venmo. So donations are welcome. You don't have to, of course, but it's always appreciated.
For sure.
Dane, my brother, episode 20 in the books, man.
Man.
Started in November. What's that? Six months ago?
I can't count. Wait.
8 months. 8 months in this thing. Almost. We're 4 months away from a year.
Oh, man, that's crazy.
Like I always tell you, bro, it's definitely been a fun journey to go on with you, man. And only wish for better, you know, better times and better things to come. That's all I can say for shizzle.
For sure, man. Appreciate you, man. Again, appreciate you for everything, man. Just like finally us getting to do this because we talked about it for so long and then he's like, you know what, let's go ahead and do the dang thing, from the actual show, the title, the intro, the themes, the website, like the man of many talents, Deontay Epps, and the work that we put into this podcast is going to be long lasting and we're going to appreciate this in the long run. So I appreciate it for one. Shout out to you again, man.
Thank you, man.
And on that note,
that was a perfect time to use
that. On that note, I'm out of here, man.
What the, yeah, before you go, always want to start closing it. You want to say, rest in peace, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, Elijah McClain. The fight continues, the fight will never stop. Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter. And we out here.